I want to take something that is more or less obscure from this coming week's Sedra, and that is the following sentence. The Torah is describing the descendants of Esav. And in there it says the following: Vayu b'nei Eliphaz, the children of Eliphaz, who was Esav's firstborn, Teman, Omar, Tzfo, Vigatom, Uknaz. They were these five children: Teman, Omar, Tzfo, Gatom, and Knaz. In the next sentence, the Timna, Paisa Pilegesh Lelifaz ben Esav, and Timna was a concubine to Eliphaz ben Esav, Vatelid Lelifaz as Amalek, and she gave birth to Amalek. That was the mother of Amalek. Ela b'nei Oda Eshes Esav. All of these are the children of Oda, the wife of Esav. Now the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that Menashe HaMelech, amongst his other derogatory, traits and accomplishments, he also lost his share in the world to come, according to some, because he was Doresh Drosha Sheldofi. He was Megala Ponim Batora Shalok Halach. The simple meaning is he dealt with the Torah in a very brazen, disgraceful manner. And he used to sit and give Drosha Sheldofi, foolish classes about Torah. And one of the things that he said was, didn't Moshe Rabbeinu have anything better to write than Timna was a Pilegesh to Eliphaz ben Esav? Who really cares who Timna was and who Eliphaz ben Esav's concubines were? Torah had to write that? And seemingly he went on to give a foolish explanation of all of this, which was brazenly in the disgraceful and in contempt of the Torah. That's what seems to be the idea. And I had a different idea that we once explained in great detail, that in itself, because the Gemara doesn't say what his drasha was, just says that he said this. It could be the Gemara didn't want to tell us his foolish, contemptuous drasha, so just hinted to it. But I once wanted to say that in itself was the contemptuous disgrace of the Torah. He said that Moshe Rabbeinu wrote what was in the Torah here just for history's sake. There was no real purpose in it. It was just a historical fact. And that is blasphemous, because nothing in the Torah is there only as a historical fact. The Torah is there to teach us fear of God, love of God, right? Teach us mitzvahs, to teach us how to act in this world and how to eventually get the next world. That's the purpose of the Torah. Nothing is in the Torah without a purpose, without a lesson. And that's called Negale Ponim BaTorah Shelo Kahalacha. Literally, what it means is the following. There are Harbe Ponim LaTorah. There are many faces, facets of Torah. 70 facets, maybe even more than that. On every word, every idea has so many different perspectives and different facets that are emes. But all of them are Halacha. Halacha meaning something that shows you and teaches you and guides you. But he was Megala Ponim BaTorah. He revealed facets of the Torah, Shalok Halacha, that were not Halacha, that were just there for information's sake, that were just there as tidbits of knowledge, trivia. That is tremendous contempt for the Torah that reduces the Torah to a history book, reduces the Torah to a science book, or a book of facts, and not a book of life. In any case, so this is what Menashe HaMelech said. So the Gemara says, so Taka, what do we do learn from this? Why does it have to tell us who Timna was, and she was a Pilegesh Telifas Ben Esav? So the Gemara says like this, because later on it says, Va'achos Lotan Timna. The sister of Lotan was Timna. Lotan was one of the kings, one of the Alufim, one of the chiefs of the Chori. And that means that his sister, obviously, was also of royal blood. And she became a concubine to Eliphaz ben Esav. How did a royal princess become a concubine? Says the Gemara, because this woman wanted very much to convert and to join the household of Yaakov Avinu and to be his Pilegish, to be his concubine. And in fact, she came even earlier. She came already when Avram was still alive, and she wanted to convert. And Avram Avinu rejected her. She tried again in the lifetime of Yitzchak and Timnah, and she was rejected again. She came again in the lifetime of Yaakov Avinu, and he rejected her. All of the Avos rejected her, so she said, you know what? It's better for me to be a concubine in the black sheep side of this family than to be a princess in some other family. So she went to Esav, and she offered to be a concubine to his son Eliphaz. According to some, she was a concubine to Esav himself and his son's wife. They were not exactly moral people. And she gave birth to Amalek. Now the Gemara has an after word of this, that because the Avos rejected her, and they shouldn't have, they should have brought her close under the wings of God's Shechina. Because of that, she gave birth to Amalek, and Amalek gave us and continues to give us till the end of time Tzaras. Focus in on each part of this separately. That's why she was called Timna. Could be Timna was a prophetic name that was given to her. Not that the person who gave the name knew what he was saying, but God, you know, directs things. Timna means to be prevented. Limnoa, to prevent, to hold back. Timna shemanua shvatim milavo bahem. The shvatim means the avos prevented her from joining the Jewish people. Now there's another limud here. That's one. That's what the Gemara says in Sanhedrin. The Ramban says another reason why it had a right who Timna was, and she was a Pilegesh. It comes to teach us a halacha. The halacha is the following: we have a mitzvah not to hate Edomites. Lo sisai vedomi ki achichohu, is your brother. That means all of the descendants of Esav were not allowed to detest and hate them. Amalek is an exception, right? They are also descendants of Esav. Esav, Eliphaz had Amalek, right? But since he had Amalek from a Pilegesh, from a concubine, and not a bona fide, wife, therefore, Amalek is not called Achicha. He's not considered of the descendants of Esav that could be considered our brothers. He's an offshoot of Esav from a concubine. And therefore, there's no prohibition of hating Amalek, just the opposite. We have a mitzvah to hate them and destroy them. Others say that another lesson over here is that you see what kind of family Esav had. Because it says that Timna, right, was a Pilegesh le Eliphaz ben Esav, but Timna was also a daughter of Esav. That means that Esav had this girl, right, and then she became a concubine to her brother, Eliphaz. So they were all mamzerim. Amalek was a mamzer. She was a mamzeres. Mamzerim. And look at the difference between, and that's why the Avos, according to one opinion, that's why they did not want to, accept her. Because she was a mamzeres. They didn't want to taint the Jewish people with her. So you see that their royalty, how tainted they were, and yet they wanted to be part of our families, and our families, because they were pure, wouldn't take in such a person. Even a royal person. Now, so according to all of this, there is a very good reason why the Torah wrote this. We do learn something from it, or learn many things from it of importance. And therefore, the word Timna has another notrikon. Notrikon is the first letters of Timna spell out the following words: Torah Hashem, Tamima, Tef, Meshivas Nofesh Mem Nod Edus Hashem Ayin. The words Tmima Meshivas Nofesh Edus smells Timna. Meaning, this is one of the places where you see where God's Torah is perfect, it has an effect on you, and it's a testimony. Because Menashe said this is just plain trivia. And here is a place where we see that what seems to be trivia has tremendous halachic implications and Musar implications. Teach us the greatness of Avraham Avinu, that royalty wanted to join them, right? Even to the point where they're willing to join the black sheep of the family, right, and not be a princess somewhere else. Okay. So that's the first part of this. Let's go to the second part. The Gemara says, however, that what the Avos did was wrong. They should have seemingly converted her and brought her under God's wings, and because they didn't, they were punished that Amalek came and hurt the Jewish people and made us suffer for time immemorial. So the Maharal Miprag adds to that. It's not just that Amalek came because we weren't Megayah, but it was a direct result. When somebody is rejected, you push them away, what results is something that becomes an antagonist to what you push away. Right? By pushing something away, you push it to the other side, and usually it becomes against. Right? So Amalek is the one who is the antagonist of the Jewish people, the ultimate antagonist, our complete opposite, because the mother was pushed away. I once wanted to explain a little bit differently. We had a whole shiur on Purim once, and we explained that Amalekim were the first atheists. Till then, there were idol worshippers and God believers. But Amalek were the first atheists. They believed in nothing. And we said atheism has two points to it. One is that atheism totally rejects any importance to the Jewish people, because our whole importance is the fact that we have a special relationship with God. But if you totally reject any God, not even gods, then you can't say that there's any importance to the Jewish people. Even idol worshippers have to admit, if you admit that there are gods, that our God seemingly, you know, has some edge on the other ones. Right? So even if you're an idol worshipper, you have to take notice of our God. Bilam, Balak, they took notice. But an atheist can't take notice of any gods because they don't believe in any gods. They believe everything is just haphazard happenstance. So, therefore, one hallmark of Amalek is to totally disregard, totally mevatel, make us nothing. It's one hallmark of Amalek. Second hallmark of Amalek is that if you don't believe in a god or even any spiritual powers that rule the world, then what does rule the world? Pipe, power, might, money. Money, basically, right? Because whoever has the money has the might, has the power, okay? So where did Amalek come from? If these are the hallmarks of atheism, why did Amalek become an atheist? Because their mother was rejected by the Jewish people. And what is usually the result of rejection? If you reject me, then you're nobody. Sour grapes, right? Who needs you? You're nobody if you reject me, because if somebody rejected me, then I'm something wrong with me. But if the person who rejected me is a nobody, right, young people, when they go out like that, right, somebody rejects them, so they say, I never wanted them anyway. Who are they? Right? That's a natural result to rejection. So the Amalek had this desire to totally make the Jewish people into nothing because they rejected their mother. And secondly, they came from Eliphaz, Esav's son. Now, Esav was more less refined, so he believed in the power of the sword, might, raw power. That was what ruled the world. Live by the sword. His son Eliphaz was more refined. He believed in the power of money, not raw might and murder, but money. How do I know that? Because when he was given the mitzvah to kill Yaakov, instead of killing him, he took away his money. And besides that, his name is exactly that. Eli, my power is paz, is gold. My power is gold. The power that I believe in is gold. In God we trust, it's on the dollar bill. That's the God that we trust in. Right? That was Eliphaz. Money is God. And therefore, coming from a father whose philosophy was that money runs the world, and a mother who was rejected by the Jewish people, the natural result is atheism. It fits both things. That philosophy fits both needs. Okay, in any case, why were the Avos wrong? I mean, first of all, she was a mamzeris, right? She was a person that really can't get married. She would have tainted the purity of the Jewish people, right? Secondly, they must have seen in her the seeds of Amalek, right? So the second thing we could say, that perhaps if they didn't reject her, those seeds never would have come out, right? They could have been mashpia on her. They could have influenced her. And maybe Amalek wouldn't have come out had they brought her into the family. And the first thing, the Rabbi Yosef Pinto says there on Sanhedrin, that they could have converted her and told her she can't get married into the Jewish people. That she can be a convert, but she can't get married. She marry somebody else, not one of the descendants of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They had many other converts. She could marry one of those converts. But she couldn't marry into the regular line of the Jewish people because she was a mamzeris, like any mamzer. Yeah?
They could have married two sisters. That's against halacha also. It was before Matan Torah. So why couldn't she marry a Jew? Also before Matan Torah.
Yeah, I understand. But marrying two sisters could be something that is beyond logic or whatever. A mamzer already has...
I said.
So the Ramban says he did that because he was in Chutz Laretz.
Okay.
And in Chutz Laretz he was able to do it. Here they were in Eretz Yisrael.
So you marry a Chutz Laretz.
What? No. He can't live with her. He can't live with her in Eretz Yisrael. That's the problem. Right. They married each other's sisters from the other mothers. Because before the Torah was given, those weren't considered their sisters. They were only sisters from the father's side, not the mother's side. Before the Torah was given, things went after the mother completely and not the father at all.
And what was Timna?
What? Timna was a mamzeris. No, she was from, from her the relationships over there were ones that were prohibited to a Ben Noach. Or to a regular non-Jew. Not only a Jew. They were prohibited even to non-Jews. She was a mamzeris, a pure mamzeris. In any case, it's possible, though, that they rejected her for the following reason. Why did she want to convert? Because she wanted to marry in to the family of Yaakov. She wanted a covet of marrying into the Avos. We know that if a convert comes for the sake of marriage, we don't convert them for the sake of marriage, right? Even though, if the Rav is the Beis Din, who is converting them, is clear to them that even without the marriage, this person would convert, then you do convert them. Right? It's not that you're not allowed to convert somebody. I'll tell you an interesting story. I hope we get to the other one. In any case, that I had in Miami. I once had a man call me, young man, called me, tells me, wants to know about converting. So I said, what religion are you? He said, Jewish. So I said, well, why would you want to convert to be Jewish? No, it's my girlfriend. I said, well, we don't convert for marriage. I said, how'd you get my name? He said, you're in the Yellow Pages. So I was ready to hang the phone up, and then I hit me, you know, if I hang up the phone, he's going to go to the next name in the Yellow Pages, and eventually he's going to find somebody who's going to convert this girl, and then for a generation, it'll be Tsaris, right? She's going to think she's Jewish, the children will think they're Jewish. Why don't I at least speak to him and try to convince him not to marry this girl? So I fast picked up the phone, and he was still there. He didn't realize that I had just about hung it up. And I told him, you know what, why don't you come in, we'll discuss it. I made an appointment with him, and he came in. And I see that he's a traditional, his father was a chazan in a conservative temple, and he himself was a chazan sometimes with his father on Yom Noroyim. A very traditional guy, very straight guy. And he met this, non-Jewish woman, and he's a medical student. And so I told him, you know what, come on, you come for Shabbos. You alone. She invited for one Shabbos, then another Shabbos, then another. After a month, he was already Shomer Shabbos, right? He was already Mamish learning, coming to Shiurim. And I figured, okay, now he forgot about this non-Jewish girl, and he's already a frum guy. We really saved this guy. Sunday morning, comes to me and he says, "No, what about my girlfriend?" I said, "What girlfriend? Don't you remember? That's how we met." He said she still wants to convert. So I said, "Okay, let her come in. I figured I'll convince her that this is not for her." So she came in, and I see that she's a very fine girl. And she tells me she really wants to convert. And her mother also at one point wanted to convert. And it's in their blood. And she really wants to be Jewish. And I said, "Sure, she wants to marry this medical student. She wants to marry a nice Jewish doctor. That's why she wants to convert, right?" And she's telling me all this baloney that, you know, she wants Judaism or whatever. I said, "What do you know about Judaism altogether, right? Bagels, lox, what do you know about Judaism, right, that you think that this is what you want to do?" I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll give you some books to read. And you read these books, and in 2 weeks, get back to me, right, if you still want to convert." Because this is what Judaism, I gave her some books on intricate halachas and whatever, on Taras HaMishpacha, and I gave her some books on Rabbi Victor Miller. I figured that, for sure, right, if she's not ready for it, and she doesn't want this, this is going to make, what? You don't know her, Victor Miller? It's after the shiur, you'll have somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
In any case, so, take some books, I figure I'll never see her again, and I hope I'll get my books back. 2 weeks later, knock at my office door, she's there with the books. "Rabbi, this is exactly what I want. I'm now more convinced that I want to be Jewish." So, but it really bothered me that I knew that this wasn't true. She wants to marry this doctor. That's why she wants to be Jewish, and all this is just an act. So I took her to meet other rabbis in Miami, and they all were impressed with her. They said, "This girl has a neshama of a tzaddikus," right? And she did. She really gave a very good impression. But I still wasn't sure. And the rabbi said, "We will agree to convert her," right? But it really bothered me. So I called her in one day. I said, "You know, the rabbis pretty much are very impressed with you, and they are willing to convert you. But you should realize, I forgot to tell you something. Since you knew this guy when you were not Jewish, after you convert, you can't marry him. That's, I made up. You can't marry him. That's the halacha. And do you still want to convert?" And there's silence. I said, "Ah, see?" She says, "Does that mean I can never get married to anyone if I convert?" I said, no, just this guy. "We'll find a nice Jewish garbage man or something for you." I didn't say that. Not this guy. She said, "Of course I want to convert. I want to be Jewish more than I want to marry him. Right? And if not marrying him will be able to make me Jewish, then..." I said, "You prepared to tell him that?" She said, "Yeah." So I called the guy on the phone, and she's crying, and he's crying, and I say to him, "What do you say, have to say about this?" She said, "Of course I want her to be Jewish. I'd love to marry her, but it's more important that she be Jewish than she marry me. So I'm willing to forego that. She's willing to forego it. Everybody's crying, and I'm crying also, because I don't know how to get out of this." They're all crying, and I realize now she really means it. I no doubts anymore. So I let this go for 2-3 days. 3 days later, I called her back. I said, "I was looking through some books, and I found a heter you could marry this guy after you convert him." After she converted, we told her the whole story. So we converted her, and they got married. They got married on the Lag BaOmer in our shul, in somebody's backyard, Levinson's backyard. We made the wedding, and they became pillars of their community in New York. Very, very fine people, very fine people. And to this day, whenever I go to New York, I stay by them. They're like mamish like children. Mamish children, what's it called? Like, so what? Yeah, because I used to stay in their house when they lived in a tenement, 3 stories up, and I used to sleep with the baby. Not only that, they had an intercom between the baby's room and theirs, and I was also in that room. So they had to listen to me breathe also. People asked me, "Why do you stay there? You could stay, you have balabatim who have, you know, rich people. Why do you stay there?" I told them, "These are my children. The mom is like children." In fact, he said, "When I was a kid, I wanted to marry a rabbi's daughter." He said, "You know what, I think I did." So even though originally she had wanted to convert, right, and there was a marriage involved, but we were convinced that wasn't the reason. That was a side thing. That wasn't the main reason. But in any case, here it says she wanted to convert because she wanted to join this family. I have the covet. It's more covet for me to join this family than to be a princess somewhere else. So therefore, they wouldn't accept her. But they should have looked beyond that and see that maybe they could have influenced her to really want to convert, not just for the covet. Now, the Gemara learns from here that one should never push away anyone with both hands. But small dochek, the left hand pushes away, and the right hand brings close. And that's how you deal, the Gemara says, with three things. A child, a woman, and the Yetzer Hara. You should never push your Yetzer Hara away completely. Because you should push it away with the left hand and bring it close with the right hand. Meaning the following. What does that mean, push it away with the left hand and put it close? What you can get a benefit from, even the Yetzer Hara has good things about it. Right? An appetite is a Yetzer Hara. Right? But you can use it for good things. Covet is a Yetzer Hara, but you can use it for covet HaTorah. So the things, you can take the good and reject the bad. Bring it close with the right, push it away with the left. That's one, the Ein Elio. The Alkut Sofer says, take the things that are good for the world to come and bring those close, and the things that are only good for this world, push away with the left hand. So that's what it should have been. You should have try to take the good out of her over here, maybe not let her get married anyway, or get married to people out of the family, the direct family, and be makarifer. That's what's called, what seems to be from the Gemara. On the other hand, there's another explanation over here, and it also explains something else in the parsha, which we have explained in the past. I'm going to mention again. We have a similar question. I mean, the Avos saw that this woman, right, has the seeds of Amalek within her. She wants to convert for covet, okay? And in fact, if somebody says left, it says b'yamina b'smola osher v'kavod, b'yamina orechaim b'yamina b'smola osher v'kavod. The right hand represents life, and the left hand is covet, osher and covet, riches and honor. So when it says you should push away with the left hand, means the coven and the osher push away. But the chayim, that which is eternal life, that you should bring close. So with her, the same thing. Push away. Don't let her get married, right, to somebody in the family like she wanted to, but let her convert. Bring out the noble reasons why she wanted to convert and push away the ignoble reasons. But in any case, so a similar thing we can ask on the following medrash. The Medrash says that one of the reasons that Dinah was attacked was because of the punishment to her father Yaakov. Meaning, why didn't God do a miracle in Yaakov's merit? That he shouldn't suffer from Dinah being attacked, because Yaakov didn't deserve that miracle. Because Lamas Mere'ehu Chesed, he could have done a kindness to his brother Esau and married his daughter Dinah to him, and maybe she would be Makarif him. She would turn him into a tzaddik, and he would do an eternal Chesed to Esau and turn him into a tzaddik. And because he put her in a box and hid her from Esau, he was held responsible for that. It was something negative that he did. So the obvious question over here is, I mean, maybe Dinah would have influenced Esau for the good, but maybe Esau would have influenced Dinah for the bad. I mean, Esau was her uncle. He was a lot older and a lot bigger Russia than she was at Tzadekis. She was a young girl, right? So how could Yaakov take a risk with his daughter, that maybe she'll influence her uncle Esav to be a tzaddik, when maybe uncle Esav will influence her to be a rasha? How do you take such a risk? And if that's the way that you're supposed to look at things, then we are going about shiduchim very, very wrong. Right? People are checking up and seeing if people have midos and if they know how to learn, or more important things, what kind of tablecloth they have on Shabbos, what color, and do they stack dishes or do they not stack dishes, right? The really important things in life that people are checking up on. Oh. Wonder why. That was why Leah didn't deserve a miracle. Yeah, something with her, something with Dinah too. But I'm just going to focus in on Yaakov. So why Yaakov wasn't spared this, right? So we check up on all these important things. But really, according to this, you know how you should get a shidduch? You have a daughter who's a tzaddikis, really fine, bas Torah. Right? Go to the Tel Aviv bus station, right? find some drunken drug addict, right? Give him a kick, wake him up, and say, have I got a girl for you, right? And maybe my daughter will be my shpia on you and turn you into a tzaddik. So you should look for the worst bum you can find, right? And hopefully marry your daughter to him so reform him. That's what Yaakov is supposed to do. Says the Alter from Slabodka. He says it doesn't mean that Yaakov should have done that. No, Yaakov had no choice. He had to hide his daughter away because of the, he couldn't take a risk. He couldn't risk his daughter because maybe he'll be able to do a kindness to Esau. Maybe Esau will do terrible things to his daughter. So he couldn't. He had to put her away. The problem was that even when you do it, you're forced to do something, but he didn't feel bad that he had to do that, that he couldn't help Esau. When he was lacquering in the box, he should have been crying. Oy, I wish I could take the chance and maybe influence my brother, but I can't do that to my daughter, so I have no choice. But he banged the nails in with a little bit too much enthusiasm. Didn't bother him that much. And that's where the problem was. Sometimes you have to do something, but you don't have to feel good about it. Same thing with the Avos. They perhaps had to reject Timna, says the Alter from Slabodka. They had to reject her. They had no choice, but they should have felt bad about it. They should have felt bad, wow, we feel terrible that we can't somehow influence this woman and give her the chesed of being able to convert, right? It's a shame, but we have no choice. But they didn't feel that bad. It didn't bother them that much. That was the place where they were punished. Not because they didn't actually do it. But even if you're forced to not do something because you can't take a risk, you should at least feel bad that you weren't able to take that risk and it wasn't possible for the good to come out of it. You couldn't do somebody a chesed, right? Sometimes you're part, somebody comes to you and wants a loan that you don't have the money for. So you don't have to feel happy that you didn't have the money. You could feel bad. I wish if I would have had the money, I could have helped this person, right? So just even the feelings, not just what you do, but how you feel about it also is very significant. That's what the Or HaTzofun says. So with all of this, you can understand why the Torah wrote this parsha to teach us all these lessons. So what Menashe HaMelech said, this is just trivia, right, was a tremendous chutzpah, tremendous brazen disgrace to the Torah, and that's why, according to the Mishnah, he lost his share in the world to come. Yes.
The story about him, is very similar to the story about Agar and Abraham. She was also an Egyptian princess and she wanted to come join the Jewish people, and Abraham took her. And in that case, taking her was resulted in Ishmael, which is a very bad thing, also. So, what's the lekach over here?
What?
What's the. See what
happened
over here?
Timna, Sarah pushed away. The truth is that in the end, Yishmael himself did tshuva, and so did Hagar.
That's only they're buried Abraham and Vina together. It's not by Ishmael. But Ishmael is the source of all our problems today.
Yeah, okay. There's other reasons for that too. But Ishmael had a zechuyos. So Ishmael has a zechus to be here in Eretz Israel too. And he has bris milah.
The zechus is already finished because of
Okay. That's why Sarah was... Well, Avram didn't want to throw him out of the house. Sarah saw better that you have to get rid of him.
The whole thing could have been avoided. The whole zechus could have been avoided. Had he not taken Hagar in the first place?
Okay, but that was Sarah's fault to begin with. Sarah gave her Hagar.
Even before the beginning. She shouldn't have accepted her in Egypt when she came, which was a princess, and she wanted to join him.
I hear. Okay, could be. Enochanan. But even that, should have felt bad about it, at least, if he wouldn't have taken it. Right? But here, he could be made a mistake to take her. I don't know if Chazal say it was a mistake or not, but we see that there were negative things from taking Hagar, that's for sure.